There's a lot of things going on.
This is a very zany kind of game.
It was ahead of its time.
It's really clever what they've done.
It's tense, but it's very brain melty.
It's kind of a mix of everything I love in trick taking.
Hello and welcome to Trick Talkers, your favorite podcast about trick takers, shedders, climbers, and other card games. My name's Ryan.
And my name is Patrick.
And tonight's episode is brought to you by Blake Wilson. Thank you so much for your support, Blake.
Thank you, Blake. He's one of our latest Patreon supporters. We really appreciate it. So, mini announcement on today's episode. Johnny has decided to take a back seat with regards to presenting episodes. He has, unfortunately, got other life commitments, but he is still very, very much a part of Trick Talkers.
Yeah, Patrick and I have really enjoyed his input and value on all of the episodes so far. He will certainly be missed within our main episodes. We do want to stress, though, he will be around in episodes in the future. But for right now, you're just stuck with Patrick and I. So hopefully that's all right with you.
Woe for them. Yeah. hopefully Johnny will be making some appearances again soon.
Absolutely. Well, moving on here into our first segment of the episode, we thought it'd be good to talk about Owl About. I know Patrick was able to play this game with his group recently, and I've talked about this game a bunch, and I really enjoy it, so we wanted to give it its time in the spotlight here on one of our episodes.
Yeah, I'm not going to call you the Owl About man, but I certainly heard about this game through you. As I tend to do with a lot of these trick takers, Ryan, you are the source that my wallet hates the most and also loves the most. So there we go. Anyway, I'm going to let you...
Double-edged sword.
Yes, double-edged sword, exactly. I'm going to let you take it away and explain to everybody how it plays and what exactly is the hook for Owl About.
Yeah, so the deck makeup in Owl About consists of 40 cards, numbered 1 through 10 in varying amounts of each number. And there are 4 special cards known as the Night Owls. They have different card backs from the regular Day Owl cards, and they're ranked numbers 4 through 7. So anyways, depending on player count, you will deal a certain number of cards to each player, and then a certain number of cards will be undealt, and the number of those cards will also vary based on player count. Once everyone's been dealt their hand, they will simultaneously pass 2 cards to the player on their right. You'll then go into the normal trick play, and there are 2 ways to play in this game. There's the basic and advanced rule set. For your first game, it is recommended to use the basic rules.
Yeah, spoiler alert, the basic game is a hoot, but the advanced game is where it shines.
But I will explain the rules for the basic game, and then we'll go in more detail on the advanced rules a little bit later. So for the first player of a trick, they can play any card that they want to. Then everyone else in the trick must play a card that has an equal to or higher speed than the highest speed in play. Speed is equal to the number on the card itself. So if you play a 7, it has a speed of 7. The Night Owl cards, though, work a little bit differently. They have 2 rules sort of attached to them. The Night Owl cards can only be played if you don't have any day cards of that same number in hand. So if you have a day 7 in your hand and a night 7 in your hand, you must play the day 7 first. Either way, once all players have played a card, the highest fight power will win the trick, and any ties goes to the first card played. Now you might be asking, well, what's fight power? Well, fight power, 99% of the time, will be equal to its speed. So the 5 card has a speed of 5 and a fight power of 5. However, the Night Owls, this is sort of their second part to them, have a fight power that is 2 higher than their speed. So the 5 Night Owl has a speed of 5, but a fight power of 7. And then just to add a little bit more wrinkle into that, the 1s and the 2s can change to an 11 and a 12 fight power, respectively, when a 9 or a 10 is played into the same trick. Now, I know that sounds like a lot, but thankfully you don't actually have to memorize any of this. The graphic design on the cards themselves is really great. Everything I pretty much just explained is explained on the cards themselves. But once everyone's played a single card into the trick, and you determine who the winner is based on playing the highest fight power, that player takes all the cards from the trick as a face-up stack and puts their card that they won with on top. There's a trophy in the middle of the card at the bottom, and that's essentially the number of tricks that you take. Day Owls have one trophy, Night Owls have two trophies.
Yeah, the trophies certainly feel more rewarding than the type of trophy that you used to get in school for your swimming lessons or whatever you used to do. Trust me, it's a lot more exciting in the context of the game. Did you win any trophies for swimming, Ryan, or anything at school?
No, usually you get gold stars, not trophies.
Gold stars, right, okay.
But those little gold stickers that you get.
But doesn't it feel more sweeter in Owl About?
It does. It feels pretty great. Unless you take too many.
Wow, that's a problem.
Yeah, and reason why taking too many is bad is because after all tricks have been played, you'll count up your trophies. The player or players who have the most trophies will score 1 point per trophy they have, and then all other players will then take the first player's trophy number and subtract their own number of trophies to get their score. So, for example, first place has 4 trophies. They would score 4 points. And let's say Patrick has 3 trophies. Well, first place was 4, subtract 3 from that equals 1, so Patrick would get 1 point. Once everyone's calculated their score, you'll shuffle up all the cards, you'll redeal based on your player count, and you'll play multiple rounds until one or more players have reached a certain point threshold. In a 3-player game, that's 15, and in a 4, 5, and 6-player game, that's 10. Once somebody hits that point threshold, the player with the least amount of points will win, and if there's any tie, those players would share the victory.
Super breezy.
So as you can...
Sorry, I was just going to say, it's super breezy, isn't it? That time flies really quickly. I didn't even try and do a pun there, but it turned into one.
Did. But that's all of the rules you'd need to know to understand the basic rule set. The advanced rule set essentially takes all of the cards and gives them special effects, which I'm going to kind of just rapid fire through them right now, and we might discuss them in more detail as we talk about the game. But the 1s, the 2s, the 9s, and the 10s don't have any special effects. The 3, you'll lose a point during the trick. 4, you can choose another player to lead the next trick instead of yourself. The 5, you can give the trophy, aka the trick, to somebody else instead of keeping it for yourself. You just can't give it to the person who has the most trophies. The 6 will flip the card that says ascent to the descent side, which again, we'll go into more detail on that. The 7, you give 3 fight power to somebody else for the next trick. And then the 8, you'll gain a point. And it is to say all of those special effects will only trigger for the winning card. So not every single time you play a 3, you'll lose a point. Or if you play a 6, it flips it. It's whoever wins the trick. When you take your cards and you stack them face up in front of you, that's why you put your card on top. Because whatever that card is the ability that you'll trigger. And then there are a couple additional advanced variants that you can add in as well. There is the all same speed in the trick. The winner of the trick just immediately gets 1 point.
Savage.
Yes, yeah. It doesn't happen often, but when it does, it feels really bad.
Yeah.
And there's 2 things that apply to the Night Owls, and these are by far my favorite variant. If you manage to collect 3 Night Owls in a round, you will score 0 points, regardless of how many trophies or tricks you've taken. And if you manage to collect all 4 in a round, you go back to 0 points in total on the scoreboard. So you could be 1 point away from losing the game, take all 4 Night Owls in a round, and bam, you're back to 0 and you're probably winning.
Doesn't it feel good to shoot the moon?
It does, yeah. And that one's very hard to do, but it is very exciting if it can be pulled off. And I will mention, and I said collect, I was very specific on that, because you don't have to win a trick with the Night Owls. They just need to be in your trick piles at the end of the round. So if you can win with a different card and take those Night Owls into tricks, it still counts.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's quite important, isn't it? Because obviously with the Night Owls, they're the only thing that's contingent on the collecting, whereas everything else, you're sort of putting face up, you know, the card that you won the trick with, and you're counting the number of trophies. So it's quite a nice little twist that with the way they've done the Night Owls.
Certainly. And the design of the game, having the Night Owls having a different card back so you can know who has them, knowing that you have to pass two cards at the beginning of the round, do you hold onto the Night Owls yourselves to try and win with them, or do you give them to other players to then try and win it from them instead?
Yeah, it's dangerous. It's the way you have to think about it tactically is interesting. And I love those dilemmas in games, you know, a bit like with hearts. You start with the Queen of Spades. Do you pass her? Do you keep her so she knows where she is? She knows where she is, so you know where she is. And it's the same. It gives me that same kind of feeling. Yes, it's not a trick avoidance game at its heart. Or is it? Because obviously, you know, you are. Sometimes you don't want to take too many, or you don't want to take the most trophies even. But yeah, it's that dilemma with the Night Owl cards. You're right, Ryan. And having that element to it, with the way the graphic design, so everybody knows you're holding that Night Owl as well, really helps with the tension. Because if you don't pass it, people look, they know you've got one. And there's only so many different variations on, you know, the Night Owl numbers in the game.
Yeah, and I think this is where some of the player counts can make the Night Owls better or worse. Because at the lower player count, like at three players, there are 9 cards that are undealt, 3 which are face up and 6 that are face down. So if a Night Owl isn't dealt out to players' hands and it's over in those undealt cards, then that round you just immediately eliminate the ability to collect 3 or 4, depending on how many are undealt. So there's a better chance that with 9 cards undealt, a Night Owl would end up over there. Whereas in a 4-player game, there's only 4 undealt cards, 5-player there's 1, and 6-player there's none. But on the flip side of that, the more players there are, the harder it is to win those Night Owls.
Right, you've got control. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so 4-player, I think, is the sweet spot to really experience this game for the Night Owls. And I think just in general for special effects and mostly card play. Because the other thing that I've seen in my plays where I've done, where I've played at 5 and 6 players, is you really only see the 1s, the 2s, the 9s, and the 10s winning the tricks. And you don't really see the middle cards win, which means there aren't any special effects that are triggering.
Right. The ones without the special effects, the owls with the headphones, as you like. So while we're on that, and of course, we'll share our experiences in terms of how successful it's been at the tabletop, to give you guys an idea, we'll retouch on the 5-player game, 6-player game. I mentioned owls with headphones. Random, I know, but this game has production and artwork pretty nailed down. It almost looks like a children's game, but actually, it's very, very cute. What's your perspective, Ryan, then, on the production and art of the game?
I love it. It is absolutely gorgeous and very cute. Like you said, the owls on every card are doing something. The one's got the headphones. There's one that's wearing a baseball cap, and they just look really cute. And the best part, though, just overall, beyond just the cuteness, is that graphic design, as I was mentioning in the rules. They have done some really clever stuff with the layout of the cards. Right above the owl itself, in the middle, there's a little branch that has smaller little tiny owls going across that branch. And the number of owls tells you how many copies of that number are in the deck. So there's 2 9s in the deck. So if you have a 9 card, there's going to be that little branch with 2 little owls on top of it to let you know there's 2 of them. And I just think that's super cool. And then all of the special abilities are in the bottom corners on the left and right to let you know that those are abilities that get triggered when you take the trick. And then the fight power, if it's ever adjusted on a card, is in the top middle part of the card. And then, of course, the numbers of the cards themselves are in the top left and right, which always refers to the speed of the cards. So everything on the card is laid out in a really nice area to just quickly let you know everything about that card without having to memorize everything.
Yeah, I was hoping you were going to say did you say there's a baseball owl?
There's the baseball cap, the number two is wearing.
I was hoping you were going to say they really knocked it out of the park with that one.
Missed opportunity.
Yeah, it was a miss. Yeah.
Swing and a miss.
There we go. There we go. And I've only seen the, I think I saw the white, what are they called? The baseball team. I really should know.
The White Sox?
The White Sox, yeah. Such a memorable experience, obviously, for me. But there we go. That's limited to my baseball knowledge across the pond, but I digress.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to touch on now that I looked it up, the outsides of the cards. There aren't any suits in this game, but there are colors around the outside of some of the cards themselves. And it allows you to group those types of cards together. The one and the two are blue, and that's because those are the cards that get affected by their fight power when a 9 or a 10 are played. The 9 and 10 are both pink cards to let you know that those are the cards that affect the ones and the twos. The threes and the eights are both yellow because those are ones that will either give you a point or lose a point. And the 4, 5, 6, and 7 are all cards that will do some shenanigans in the round, giving other players stuff or changing the way the game flow works. So I just think that's a neat little addition they did too, which is just so minor, but it's very helpful.
Do you know what, Ron? I played it and I knew they were different, obviously, but I didn't make the connection with that. So actually that's really helpful. And to be fair, even if, you know, folk out there and you're colorblind or and you've got visual impairments, then I think the graphic design is actually really clear as well. So, and they've done a lot of, they've really thought about how to help players play the game in a game that could be quite unintuitive playing at the advanced level for someone at first getting into it. So I think they've done, which probably is a good time to go over to the rules here, but certainly from a graphic design perspective and as you were saying, Ryan, with the colors, they've done a good job.
Yeah, and the game does come with player aids as well, which pretty much sum up everything that the card has, but even smaller on one player aid card. So there's multiple ways to get all that information. But as you were saying, though, about an intuitive and ease of play as far as playing basic versus advanced, I always recommend people play the basic rules first, even if it's just for a single hand. You don't have to play an entire game, but understanding the flow of how this game works, playing the equal to or faster than speed of the highest card in play, is sort of like a climbing game. So anyone who's familiar with Haggis or Tishu or any style of game like that where you always have to play a card that's higher, this one's a little bit nicer. You can play equal to as well, which actually is sort of reminiscent of Bridge City Poker. Mm. This does like exactly like that does, where everybody gets one chance to play to the trick, but you're playing equal to or higher than whatever's played. But if you throw in abilities right from the start, it can get really crazy and can get to be a lot for some people.
Yeah, those owls can get lost in the woods. I taught this game. In terms of looking at the rules, the first time I looked at the rules, we sat in the pub, got Owl About out, and literally burst into laughter when we sort of read the rules. Because obviously the designer has made an effort to translate them into English, which is very, very thoughtful. But it's just some of the context when it is translated. You know, I think there was a quote in there which said, Ryan, correct me if I'm wrong, night cards, we don't care about those. I mean, we just sort of said, oh, you know, we tried to play the game. We got it out. We said, well, night cards, well, we don't care about those. You know, where else do you go from there? We didn't know what else to do with them. We got all the contents out, set the game up and thought, well, we don't know what we're doing. We don't know how to play. Here's my owl with the headphones and here's your owl with the baseball cap, right? And then kind of said, okay, we probably need to learn the rules. But in terms of entertainment factor, this game, you know, that was a 10 out of 10. I haven't laughed so much in a very long time. But it's not, that's not the only reason, of course, you'd buy the game. But the translated rulebook that's enclosed is funny. Fortunately, Ryan was very thoughtful and retranslated the rules in a way that English speakers would be able to understand more coherently. And I believe that is on BGG, right, Ryan?
That is correct. It is on the files section on the Owl About page on BGG, which we'll put a link in the show notes.
So, yeah, don't worry about it from that perspective, because Ryan's got you covered, and this game is worth the investment in terms of understanding how the mechanics work. But as Ryan was saying, we played one hand with the basic version, and at the end of that one hand, I said to the group, I'm glad we played it like that, because had I just thrown you in at the advanced level, you guys might have been a bit lost. And everybody sort of concurred and nodded and sort of said, yeah, you know. So we're not just saying it. That is, it, you know, get the basic flow of the game and then explore it further.
Yeah, one of the things we didn't really go into detail, which I want to do now, is the 6 card. When playing with the advanced rules, if a 6 wins a trick, you flip the ascent card to descent, which didn't really go over that in the rules either, but there's a card in the middle of the table that you put face up on the ascent side. That just gives you the reminder of the rule that you have to play equal to or higher than the speed of the highest card in play. Well, when a 6 wins a trick, you flip that to the descent side, and it now flips everything. So now it becomes equal to or lower than for the speed value that you're playing, and the lowest fight power wins the trick instead of the highest. But the thing is, the 1 and the 2's ability, where it turns to an 11 or 12 when a 9 or 10 are played, still is in effect. So having to constantly remember that and immediately change your brain to, okay, wait, now I have to play, you played a 5, I have to play lower now, but then a 6 wins another trick and then it gets flipped back over. Like, it's a lot to keep track of if it's your first time playing.
Right. If it's your first rodeo, there's a lot of moving parts in terms of remembering certain rules and conditions. It's not insurmountable. It's definitely something you just get, you know, after, but I think having that one hand, as Ryan said, is a great idea to ease players into the experience. And then you start, you know, introducing all these other spicy powers, etc. With all that being said, from an accessibility perspective, what do you think?
Yeah, I still would say, even using the basic rule set, this probably isn't going to be an entry-level trick taker. If you have people coming over or you're going to a game night and you want to show off your trick-taking collection, this probably isn't one that you're going to want to include to show first-timers. It's a little bit more of an oddball game. It's a lot of weird mechanics, which for a trick-taking connoisseur or someone who's maybe, you know, dipped their toe further in this genre, would like that. It's a really cool twist on trick-taking, but for someone that's just coming new to it, that's probably going to be really overwhelming.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, probably not as overwhelming as my first game of Teach You, Orion, which an interesting one to teach, obviously. But it's almost, yeah, you're presenting them with a load of different buttons to press and you're basically saying off you go, and they're not necessarily knowing which ones to press at the right time. I mean, one thing that did make it much easier for my group is, I didn't mention speed, I didn't mention fight power. I simply said to my group, the rank of the cards is on the outside. That is the rank you must follow, except sometimes they also have a higher rank in the middle. And that means they're stronger, but you always must follow the rank that's on the outside of the card when you're following in terms of what to play next. And when I then went back and said, oh, by the way, this was called speed and this was called fight power, they said, okay, yes, that would have been a bit more confusing. So play the game, but perhaps it's a good way of teaching it is look at the rank on the outside, follow the rank, and don't worry too much about the terminology. That's just our talk, right?
Certainly. No, I think the use of speed and fight power helps with the theme and having a thematic teach. But if you want to get a little bit clearer, more to the basics, doing something like you said and just calling it rank.
Yeah, like you said, it's a nice touch and I can see what they're trying to do. But in terms of people understanding, you know, coming from another trick taker game or whatever, you may have more mileage that way. I would say this game is probably for an intermediate or a veteran trick taker, or as Ryan said, a trick taking connoisseur. But what do we really mean by that, Ryan? Are we're basically saying at least play one or two other trick-taking games potentially before trying to attack the advanced rules here.
Yeah, I'd say that's a fair summary. Okay. Like most games, especially these card games, that has a basic and an advanced mode. Usually the ultimate end goal that the designer intended the game to be played as are using the advanced rules. But there's always a good reason to include those basic rules, and this game is a good example of that. If this game only came with advanced rules and used that as the only way to play, I think this game would be a lot harder for me to recommend for anybody to try, let alone buy it, because of how difficult a teach could be for some people for this game. I know we've talked about the game Trick Takers on this podcast many times before, and that is a good example of a big, heavy upfront teach that could be a lot harder for some people. Now, Owl About, I don't think is as hard or as long as Trick Takers, but you're definitely getting a step in that direction.
Yeah, and I mean, you could then compare it to teaching the Trick Takers, the basic characters, to then, you know, starting to throw other characters in, expansions in. Okay, I don't quite think Owl About reaches the same difficulty level in that sense, but because there's obviously less rules, it's a smaller game. But what's your success been with the game at the tabletop?
Yeah, the couple times I've played it at 5 and 6, it's usually fallen pretty flat. I had one game at 6 players where everybody was new except for me, and 3 of the people never wanted to play the game again.
Wow.
Yeah. And I mean, again, it came down to the point of we played a hand of the basic, and then there was already some sort of hesitancy of even changing to advanced and playing with the abilities. Well, we did it anyways, went through the teach of how they all worked. And as I sort of mentioned earlier, they never really triggered. The ones, the twos, the nines, and the tens ended up winning a majority of the tricks that we rarely saw any of the abilities take effect. And I know we've talked about this in the past when we talked about Tanuki to Chagum. If the hook of your game never happens, is it a good game? The whole hook of using the advanced rules, which again, my belief that this is the way the game should be intended to be played, if you never get those abilities to trigger, is it a good game at that player count? Because I'm saying specifically that player count, because the lower player counts, it happens way more often and it's way more interesting. So I think this comes down to, it's another one of those games where they might have padded player counts to say it plays at these, but it's never really should be played at those player counts.
My raccoon occasionally hides in the tea kettle, Ryan. Tanuki to Chagum, that another game we talked about, as you said, historically. I get your point, although for me at 5 players, it didn't fall flat. I mean, the owls have wings for a start, right? But at the end of the day, I up front said to the players, by the way, you know, it's not best at 5. It's probably going to be best at 4. Haven't played it at 4. Just from a control perspective. But I want to teach you the game because, you know, we had the time in the pub where we all had a laugh. But now let's get down to the nitty gritty and find out what the game's all about. So, Owl About, if you like. We enjoyed it. We had a good time. People liked the game. I can't help but thinking, Ryan, drawing back on your summary, if only that was a 4-player play of it, because yes, we did trigger owl abilities, but it would have been more exciting and potentially more controllable. Not to say it wasn't exciting, though. I can't imagine playing 6 players and having a good time, but 5 players was, yeah, that was good, you know. But then having played it at 3-player with yourself and Johnny, I can see that, you know, you're right. 3-player, it's not 4 either, but that was better than 5-player from a control perspective. I think actually in our 3-player game, did you, I think you might have taken all the Night Owl cards. I know we were saying it's not as likely because there's some undoubt cards, but I think you did.
I did. I actually took 4 Night Owls one round, and then 3 Night Owls two other rounds.
So there you go. It's still possible.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that was certainly my best game of Owl About by far. I've never done so well.
You thrashed a couple of newbies at the table. I hope you feel proud of yourself.
I feel very proud.
Yeah. So our conclusive thoughts, Ryan, it sounds like we're on the same page. You know, we're sort of saying the lower player count is probably more exciting. And 5 and 6, well, let's not talk about 6. And in summary, I'm just going to say that this was a game that I'd avoided for the longest time. Because when I first came across it, I saw people saying, oh, you know, the owl powers. And, you know, there was this, I was worried about whether it was going to be too chaotic or whatnot. But the fact the powers come in after the trick's been evaluated, they don't change the evaluation of the trick. I had a good time. And it just goes to show that what you hear on the grapevine isn't always translated in, you know, when you actually get it to the table and play it. Cute games. We touched on it earlier, but I'm not going to steal your thunder, Ryan, because I know that we have an announcement to make, and I'm going to let you take the spotlight to do so.
We are actually going to delay the announcement just by a little bit, so we'll do that annoying thing where they suspense. Say wait to the end, yeah, and leave suspense.
I like it.
Because we're going to talk about the other game before we get that announcement.
There we go, leave me in suspense.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, with talking about cute games here and talking about trick takers, well, Kings has launched on Kickstarter. The day this episode releases will be February 7th, which is the same day the Kickstarter for Kings will have launched. And Kings is the newest game from the designer Hirokin, who has designed the trick takers games. So we're going to put a link in the show notes for that Kickstarter, so go ahead and check it out. But I'm just going to give you a quick overview of sort of how the game plays here. You'll see some similarities in Kings, as you will from the original Trick Takers games, but the overall game play is certainly different. There are still 3 rounds in the game, and you will be drafting characters at the beginning of each round, except for your king and their associated Jack and Queen. You draft them at the beginning of the game and you have them throughout the entire game. But at the beginning of each round, you'll draft 3 other regular characters. All of these are characters that you're very familiar with from the original games. The Hermit, the Gambler, the Berserker, so on and so on. There is one new character, though, the Cheerleader, which is really cool. Gets that momentarily. But you're going to pick 3 of those regular characters, so you'll have a total of 6 characters in front of you. The Jack, the Queen, the King, and your 3 regular characters that you take. You'll then play your 5 tricks using the same exact deck makeup and deck hierarchy as you would see in regular trick takers, except for there are 10s added to the red, blue, green, and black suits. And the Kings themselves become the highest ranked card in the trick. They rank higher than the rare cards, and if there is a later king played, that one would win. Otherwise, after you've played all 5 tricks, you'll then look to see if you hit your bid. Well, how do you determine what your bid is? Those 3 characters that you drafted at the beginning of the round all have they're all double-sided. On the back side, they have bid amounts, a number as well as a point threshold or a score that you'd get for hitting that bid. So if you pick a character that has a bid of 2 or 3, you take 2 tricks, you hit your bid of 2, you score whatever points are below that. You'll then shuffle up the deck, redeal out the 5 cards to each player, draft 3 new characters. The rule there is you cannot draft the characters that are in front of you. You can take the same type of character. So if you wanted a Berserker and another player had one in front of them, you could take that. But if you took a Berserker in the previous round, you can't retake that same Berserker in front of you. You'll play round 2 exactly the same way you did round 1. You'll then draft for round 3 the exact same way you did for round 2. And then in round 3, you can actually make 1 or 2 bids instead of just 1. The Jack card that you had from the beginning of the game also has a bid number on the back of it. You can include that in your bid when you make 1 or 2 bids. After all 3 rounds, whoever has the most points wins. Now, that was rather butchered and kind of short. Just again, try and keep it a brief overview when it was still kind of long, because I know this game, just like Trick Takers, has a lot of moving parts and is a bit to explain.
The king of rules explanations.
Yes. But that should hopefully give you some idea, along with looking at the Kickstarter page itself, as to how the game will play.
Yeah, this is an interesting one for me. I've not played King, so I can't judge it on its merits in terms of how the game actually plays. I know you've played earlier and probably, well, the latest iteration of it as well. I know you were sort of involved in the playtesting of it earlier on. What's your opinion on how that's changed and developed, just to give the listeners a bit of a taste? Are you vibing it, and, you know, is it appealing? Does it seem appealing to you?
Yeah, I'll be pretty blunt. The original playtest versions that I was a part of were not that enjoyable. I think my entire group all agreed on this. And it was never really that fun enough to where I'd want to play it over Trick Takers. Because, of course, the first thing you're always going to do with this game is try and compare it to Trick Takers. And the ultimate question of how different is it from Trick Takers? Is it worth to have both?
Yeah.
Well, the way it was designed before, I would have said the answer was no. Don't need it if you already have Trick Takers. But now, with this newest iteration, and I'm trying to keep FOMO down and telling people, go buy it. Like, it's still, if you don't like Trick Takers, Kings isn't going to fix that for you, is what I'll start off with.
Right.
But I will say the newest iteration of Kings is really enjoyable, and I'm very excited to get a real copy. Because I have the playtest copy, the one I made for my rules video on my YouTube channel, and the one that I've been playtesting with people here. And I actually just played it last night again, and I'm like really excited to get the the chunky wooden coins for the point tokens and the nice box and everything.
Right. And so the other comparison people are going to make, Ryan, here, and me included, is what about people who've got little trick takers or were considering Little Trick Takers? That's another iteration of the Trick Taker system that's available, I think, still in Japan. Where would you then say, if we throw that into the mix, where would you lie?
I would say Kings is still worth it on its own then, because of the fact that to own Little Trick Takers currently means you have to own the base game as well.
Right, right.
Because Little Trick Takers is missing the deck of cards and the point tokens and the things to make it a true standalone game, whereas Kings will be a true standalone game. So that alone already makes Kings more worthwhile for somebody. But if you're someone who already owns Little Trick Takers in the base game and everything, including the expansion, then I would say the biggest difference from Kings is the bidding system. The fact that you will bid every round for the number of tricks you're going for essentially makes everybody the gambler. So if you like bidding in your Trick Takers in general, then I think Kings is something you'd want to check out. The other thing that's really neat and I really like is the drafting mechanic, where you can't draft the same exact character card that you had from the previous round. And that is a very new iteration to Kings, let alone the Trick Takers universe. Before, there was always problems with the collector and having a really powerful bid. It's the only character on the backside of the card that has a 3-bid option. And having 3 bids available to you on a number of tricks to take is really good versus only 1 or 2 options.
Right.
And when one player drafted that card in the old iteration, they had that card for the entire game. And most of my playtests, either in a group I was playing in or I taught the game and then just let those people play, the person who had the collector, or people, if there were multiple, would usually use the collector for their bid every round.
Right.
Because it just made your bid options way easier. But in this new version, you can't redraft the same character in front of you. So if you take the collector this round, you're not going to get it for the next round unless you can take the other collector that another player took. So it immediately dampens that what could have been seen as being overpowered, and that also does it for all characters. If there's a character you think is overpowered, well, you're only going to get that overpowered ability for the one round. Again, unless you can get the other character version card of it. But it just means that characters are cycling, and the three combination of characters that you're going to have every round will be different. Which then leads me into the next part that makes this one sort of special because of that, is the combos that you're going to make. The different characters you'll put together, the different combos that you'll see within card play, just grows more exponentially on Kings than it might on Little Trick Takers or regular Trick Takers with the different powers and stuff that you can put together.
Right, because I remember we talked about, and for context for an UD who's not familiar, in Little Trick Takers there was, I haven't played it yet, as with half of my collection, but we won't talk about that. The ability to merge two cards together to create combinations, that was available in Little Trick Takers. And you also have that item shop where you could combo characters with certain items and things. So it sounds like it's a maturation of some of the highlights of the things we enjoyed in Trick Takers and some of the things we enjoyed in Little Trick Takers and distilled down into what's become Kings. And I say that without playing it, but from the way you describe it.
No, I think that's a perfect summary for it. The combination of characters from Little, you get that same sense from Kings, but Little Trick Takers only does it in round three, whereas Kings is doing it the whole game. So you've got that. If you really like having a lot of characters up front, then Kings is definitely your way to go. Now that's where you then get to the, okay, well, when you taught Little Trick Takers or even just regular Trick Takers to people, was it a lot? Was the rules overhead and the amount of information you're explaining to people of, oh, this character does this and this character does that, except when this happens and then this does this. And like, if that became a lot and all the asymmetry of abilities was a lot to go over, then Kings is probably going to be a little bit more problematic because you have access to all characters right at the beginning of the game. So you would need to know how all characters work to know what you'd want to draft. Now, I will say, though, there is going to be in the rule book a recommended playset. So the first time you play the game, you don't actually draft. It just says, okay, you take the white king, then you're going to take these three regular characters. You're taking the blue king, you're going to take these three characters. So that way you can just avoid having to do that. But the problem is, somebody still has to know how all the characters work because they still need to be able to explain those characters to whoever takes them. So it's kind of like Root, as you know, this game always gets referred to.
Yeah.
Someone's got to know how all the factions work to be able to explain how they work. But then whether or not all the other players truly understands what another player's ability is comes down to just you need to play the game a bunch of times. And Kings is no different than that. Your first play of it's probably not going to, no, it's not going to go well. Right. You need to experience it a couple times and then you'll see a combo and go, oh, that's a cool combo. I'm going to try that next time. And then, oh, I'll try this one. And then eventually it'll start to click. And that's kind of when you can get the full enjoyment from the game.
So, yeah. Okay. And without going down too much of a rabbit hole here, I had one more question for you on it, but also to acknowledge what you were saying about the powers. In games that we play, sometimes it feels like one person, you know, I can think of games, yeah, we talk about Cosmic Encounter, or there's an alien power, or Dogs of War, somebody's got the character that does such a thing, and then other players at the table start going, well, you've got the overpowered character, of course we can't win, you have that ability. I like the sound of the fact that you're not, you know, you're not, one player's not stuck with one character for the whole game and therefore feels like they've been beaten to a pulp because their character was inferior. That sounds good with the drafting. And my question for you, with that in mind and bidding, sometimes Trick Takers, you know, Ryan, bidding games especially, we always question, well, does the game reward you sufficiently for, you know, bidding high or bidding low, or, and, you know, we've talked about points on Ghost of Christmas and games like that before where the bidding system's a bit iffy. I don't know if you use that over there in the States, iffy?
We do, yeah.
Are they iffy? So what do you think? Does scoring feel relative to the bidding? Does it feel fair or rewarding?
Yeah, no, I think it does. With the multiple options with all the characters that are available to you and the addition of the Jack cards, all of the Jacks have bid options on the front of them. So the rounds 1 and 2, you're going to pick a character to use as your bid, but you'll always have your Jack by default to sort of go back on at the very least. And then there are other characters that on their front side will have additional bonus points if you take a certain number of tricks. So you could theoretically pick a character that has a bid of 2 and 3 tricks, only take one trick, but get just as many points or maybe almost as many because the Jack and the other two characters you had face up gave you points for just winning a trick. That it can be helpful for that. So for people who aren't too great at bidding games, you still have that option to, oh, I missed my bid, I'm still getting some points. And in this game, bidding can be tough because of how chaotic the trick play can be. White flags turning into rare cards mm-hmm. getting beat by kings, yeah. later kings beating other kings. Like there's a lot of things that you can't truly expect of, oh, I've got the 10 black. That's like almost the second highest card. And it's got lots of things it could lose to.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you.
So that's kind of the one part. The other part is just sort of flat out answering the question of, is the bidding itself worth it? If you hit your bid, is it fair? Is it worthwhile? I still think, yeah. I think the way the points work for all the characters, the options you have for them, and the fact that you have two other sort of support characters that you use their abilities to help hit your bid, you have good ways to try and make sure you get to that as best as you can. And there aren't any characters that are so crazy that are, I mean, again, the collector might have been that problem, but you can't keep it multiple rounds in a row, so it's not too bad. But the point values on them, without having played the game 30, 40 times, it's hard to say, are the actual points on each bid fair? Because there's so many characters, there's so many bid options. Yeah. That's going to come with lots of playtesting, which you just, you know, has been done. So you'd have to assume the points are that way. But with any asymmetrical game, there's always going to be something that once it goes out to the public, players are going to find that issue, that card that might be broken, that card that seems too crazy. It unfortunately is just going to happen.
It's only a house rule away, though, isn't it, Ryan? I mean, at the end of the day. But it sounds like from how you've described it, solid system. It sounds like it's a game that people can be excited about. And certainly if you've got any interest in the Trick Taker series or you're familiar with the other games, sounds like it's worth at least, you know, checking out when it launches. And speaking of which, I mean, the game, the artwork is extremely cute. Wonderful, wonderful looking game. And I could certainly say that without having even opened the box to see what's in there. But looking at the artwork, there's a serious talent behind the art in all of the trick-taking series, especially Kings. I love the frog character, is it, with the crown?
Yeah, the frog is probably my favorite king.
Yeah, amazing stuff.
It's very cute.
And I suppose, are we going to tell people about the two editions? I think you mentioned there was two editions that were available for people to get their hands on.
Yeah, so on the Kickstarter itself, there's going to be the compact version, which will be around $20, and that's just going to have the 100 cards that come in the game in a smaller box. And then there's going to be the standard version, as it's called, which is going to be around $35, and that's going to have all those same 100 cards. However, the 35 character cards, so all the Jack, Queen, Kings, and the regular characters will all have Spot UV on them, making them nice and shiny and pretty.
So they get a tan.
There will also...
Yeah.
There will also be wooden cookie tokens, which are going to be the points for the game. They'll come in 10s, 50s, and 100s. And then the box itself is also going to have Spot UV, and of course will be a little bit bigger than the compact size to fit all that goodness in there.
Sounds good. Is that because Spot UV, is that kind of the shiny...
Yep. Yeah, when you kind of move the box back and forth, the cards back and forth under light, you'll see it shimmer and shine.
Shame you can't eat the cookie tokens.
yeah, these are going to be wooden, and I think they'll clearly look like not candy, like the Trick Takers points.
Hopefully, yeah. Zero calories.
Yeah.
So, I know, are you going to tell me what this announcement is then, Ryan? Or I'm pretending I don't know here, but are we going to, is this the time that we can reveal, or are we going to keep them waiting a little bit longer?
I think this is the time now.
Okay.
And for most people, by the time this recording comes out, you'll actually have heard this news as well. If you're in the Portland Game Collective Discord, or if you backed 535, or if you're just on the Portland Game Collective email chain, you've already seen this message. But you can get excited about it again.
There we go. I'm already excited, and I haven't even heard you say it again yet.
Yeah. That announcement is Portland Game Collective will be releasing the English edition of Trick Takers. That will include the base game, the expansion, and Little Trick Takers itself. I know, it's speechless.
I'm absolutely gobsmacked. I have, I will say, it gets me every time. You did tell me earlier, and I stunned in silence, and I'm stunned in silence yet again, because I'm someone who's got the Trick Takers game, label paper and cutting out, sticking and everything else went into it. But I think that's such a fantastic thing for English-speaking audiences, and to take this masterpiece of a design and release it on a wider scale so that other people can discover it, and that it become, you know, more intuitive, people haven't got to paste up copies. I think it's a wonderful thing, bringing Trick Takers into outside of the land of Japan, if you like, and more into the spotlight for English-speaking audiences who love the trick-taking genre. So kudos to Portland Games for securing the ability to reprint this game. And it's great that the designer has also chosen to do that. I think it's a great move.
Absolutely. You know, Hirokin is a great guy. I've been in contact with him for quite a while now, just from when I created the paste-ups from the Japanese version of Trick Takers. And then he ended up joining into the Discord server within Portland Game Collective and became very active in that very active thread about the Trick Takers game. And early on, once the game was getting into people's hands, of course, the Japanese version, and getting the paste-ups and looking at the rules, there were a handful of rules questions, because there's, again, a lot going on in that game. The asymmetry, some of those one-off situations that Hirokin was able to answer himself, which was super cool.
Dedication.
And just seeing some of his write-ups and responses to Trick Takers itself, and sort of getting in the mind of where the game came from. His designer diary about how he designed Trick Takers and the expansion and Little. We'll put the link for that in the show notes. It is in Japanese, but if you toss it up on the internet, it should do the automatic translate if you have Google or something. But he basically explains how he came up with the design of the game after he played Root and The Crew and Skull King. So that perfect mashup of trick-taking and asymmetrical abilities. And you can see that shines in Trick Takers itself. But yeah, PGC, which I am a part of, I'm very excited to be able to be a part of bringing this English edition of Trick Takers out into the world. I know we don't really have any more information beyond that it's coming. So we will have more information. Yeah, no, that's the first step right there, right?
Yeah.
We'll definitely have more information in the near future. So keep an eye out for that. Whether you want to pop over to the Portland Game Collective Discord server and follow along there, or just keep listening here. You know, we talk about this game a lot. So any new news on it that's important, we'll be sure to update you on.
So one question I did have, Ryan, for people who do already have a copy of Trick Takers and, you know, Little Trick Takers or that expansion stuff and things, that's one way of describing the complete series. But
Trick Takers Collection, that's a simple way to...
Trick Takers Collection, I just went around the hills to do it. For anyone who's got the Japanese versions of these, and to be clear here, we're not saying they're obsolete. We're saying, okay, you know, anybody who's already got a copy, That's great. Obviously, Hirokan, of course, appreciates the support. My understanding then with the new reprint is going to be sort of translation rework. Are we expecting any rule changes or any anything significant changing in the game, or are we keeping the formula but just making it sort of more widely available?
I can't really give too many answers on that. The best I can say is it's going to be the rules rework as far as, or the translation rework, right. Excuse me. Right. Of course, I made the translations for the character paste-ups themselves, and Fumi did an amazing job with the rule book and getting those translated. But we're going to re-go through the rules and get more things squared away. We're going to have more FAQs and player aid for a lot of those what seem like one-off situations that actually happen a lot, more included in the rule book itself. So the main rule book might end up being a little bit bigger than what the older rule book or the Japanese version was like, because we want to make sure we get those in there. But any actual gameplay changes or anything, I can't make any comments on it at this point.
Yeah, no, that's okay. But either way, it's great news for the trick-taking community. And obviously, if you have got a copy of the Japanese version, like myself, keep playing it and keep enjoying the masterpiece, as I said before, that is Trick Takers.
So yeah, anyways, like I said, we'll have more information about Trick Takers in the future as we have information to share, but really excited to just get the announcement out there. And honestly, I think that's a fantastic way to end the episode with a bang-up announcement like that. So moving on here with a couple things for us. We do have a Patreon page, as we've said here on the past few episodes. We have a few patrons already backing us, which we absolutely appreciate all of the support you've given. But for you who are listening and aren't a patron, that's totally fine too. Any support that you can give us, just listening to it is support enough. We really do appreciate it. I know we say this, and I'm going to keep saying it, and it might not sound sincere, but it is. I it's just amazing. This whole Trick Talkers podcast that we're doing is super cool, and to have as many people listen to us is so cool. But if you would like to support the show through Patreon, you can head over to patreon.com/TrickTalkers.
Yeah, just joining Blake Wilson over there, who sponsored today's episode, if you will. Really appreciate it for anyone who wants to do that. That's Ryan was saying. So nothing left to do now, but thank you for listening to Trick Talkers. If you guys have any questions, you've got comments, recommendations, or perhaps you want a recommendation on a game, let us know and we can always answer it on one of the upcoming episodes. We can be reached on Twitter if you look for Trick Talkers on Twitter, or via email at tricktalkers@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. We've been Trick Talkers. As Ryan would always say, we'll see you around.